Nivriteshvasva medeshu. Raja yasmat pitamaha.
Raja yasmat pitamaha.
Srinvan bhagavato daiman.
Srinvan bhagavato daiman.
Apricharidam achutam.
Apricharidam achutam.
Translation. Your grandfather, King Yudhisthira, after completing his Ashwamedha sacrifices, asked Lord Achyuta this very same question while hearing the Lord's explanation of religious principles. Translation responsibly. Your grandfather.
King Yudhisthira,
after completing his Ashwamedha sacrifices, asked Lord Achyuta this very same question. While hearing the Lord's explanation of religious principles. So just remind me, what was the question that's being asked? Yes, Prabhu?
Why is Lord Narayana very opulent, yet his devotees are not so materially opulent?
Yeah.
On the other hand, Lord Shiva, who is like a renowned person, mm-hmm. having no house and no nothing, yet his devotees, they're materially opulent.
That's right. So there's no purport to this one, and I'll just read a couple more shlokas. A translation. This question pleased Krishna, the king's lord and master, who had descended into the family of Yadu for the purpose of bestowing highest good on all men. The Lord replied as follows as the king eagerly listened. This shloka is very interesting, as you'll hear. The personality of Godhead said, If I especially favour someone, I gradually deprive him or her of wealth, then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken person abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. That's Lord Krishna says that. So the purport to this is by the devotees of Srila Prabhupada. Amagana Timiranda Shaganandana Shalakya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutaleshi Mari Vridaya Nanda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutaleshi Mari Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharani Nebisesha Shinavani Pashachari Shatarani. The purport is devotees of the Supreme Lord. This is quite a long purport, but it's a really interesting purport, so. The devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as a consequence of material work, but as an incidental effect of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami, in his Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, his definitive treatise on the process of devotional service, explains how a Vaishnava is relieved of all karmic reactions, including those that have not yet begun to manifest, those that are just about to manifest, kutta, and those that are barely manifesting, bija, and those that have manifested fully, aprabhava. As a lotus gradually loses many petals, so a person who takes shelter of devotional service has all his karmic reactions destroyed. That devotional service to the Lord eradicates all karmic reactions is confirmed in this passage of the Gopala Tapani Shruti, Parva 15. Devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing the mind upon Him, becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and in the next. It results in the dissolution of all karma. While it is certainly true that those who practice devotional service remain in material bodies and apparently material situations for some time, this is simply an expression of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord, who bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. In every stage of devotion, however, the Lord watches over his devotee and sees the gradual elimination of his karma. Thus, despite the fact that the happiness and distress devotees experience resemble ordinary karmic reactions, they are in fact given by the Lord himself. As the Bhagavatam 10.87.40 states, Bhavad Uta Sudar Sudayayo A mature devotee recognizes the superficial good and bad conditions he encounters as a sign of direct guidance of his ever well-wishing Lord. But if the Lord is so compassionate to his devotees, why does he expose them to the special suffering? This is answered by an analogy. A very affectionate father takes the responsibility of restricting the child's play and making them go to school. Isn't that true? You'd like to play, but you'd like to go to school. He knows that this is a genuine expression of his love for them. Even if the children fail to understand, similarly, Lord Vishnu is mercifully strict with all his dependents, not only with the immature devotees struggling to become qualified. Even perfect saints like Prahlad, Dhruva, Yudhisthira were subjected to great tribulations, all for their glorification. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Sri Bhimadev described to King Yudhisthira his wonder at this. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It's irreversible otherwise. How can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod, controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with a club, the great bowman Arjuna with his mighty weapon, Gandiva, and above all the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas, O King, no one can know the plan of Lord Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. Bhagavatam 1.9.15.16. Although a Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leave a subtle residue, the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend toward degradation and increase the danger of falling into a hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desire, however, have no trace after their immediate purpose has been served. Moreover, Vaishnavas who enjoy such reciprocation with the Lord is in no danger of falling down into nescience. As Yamaraj, the Lord of Death and the judge of all departed souls, declares, "My dear servants, please bring me only those sinful people who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose head has not bowed down even once before the Lord. Send me those who do not perform their duties towards Vishnu, which are only duties of human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals." Bhagavatam 6.3.29. The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the suffering he imposes on them. Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure. Just as a stinging ointment applied by a physician cures the patient's infected eye, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless, and it also increases the eagerness which the devotee call upon the Lord to appear. If the devotees of Lord Vishnu were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this world as Krishna, Ramchandra, Nrisimha, and so on, as Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita 4.18. Paritanaya saranam vishaya chaduskrita dharma sampatatayaya sambhavani yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreant, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. And without the Lord showing himself on earth in his original form of Krishna and in the forms of various incarnations, his faithful servants in this world would have no opportunity to enjoy his rasa lila and other pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for some other reason than to deliver saintly persons from suffering? The learned Acharya responds, "My dear brother, this makes good sense, but you are not expert in understanding the spiritual moods. Please listen. It is at night that the sunrise becomes attractive, during the hot summer that the cold water gives comfort, during the cold winter months that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day. And when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good. In other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, the Lord arranges for his devotees to go through some suffering. And when he appears, in order to deliver them, their gratitude and transcendental pleasure is boundless. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's an amazing purport. So, just to read the translation again. The personality of Godhead said, if I especially favour someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth, then the relatives and friends of such poverty-stricken men abandon him. In this way he suffers one distress after another. Is that what we came to Krishna consciousness for? To suffer distresses? For a materialist, if a materialist read this, they'd be going, see you later. Gotta go now. There's a Shiva temple just down the road. I only have to do some quick pujas and I'll win Tats Lotto or make some wealth. But the devotees come to Krishna consciousness because they want to render loving service to Krishna. And this loving service, as is pointed out in the purport, protects one from karma, cleanses one from the karma that we've accrued over many, 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 many lifetimes. And from the outside perspective, it seems that this karmic reaction is much the same as what the materialists are suffering. You know, people get sick, people get broken injuries, have car accidents. Devotees have that too. So, but we can understand again from the purport here that Krishna is actually in control. Once a person surrenders to the process of Krishna consciousness, has made an effort that now I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna, 100% I surrender my life to Krishna, material energy doesn't take charge anymore. Krishna says, excuse me, I'm looking after this person myself. And we never get as much as we can handle. Krishna always gives us just what we can handle. So, we have to be karma free to go back to the spiritual world. We can't go with any tinge of karma. We have to be karma free. So, you know, there has to be some reactions to activities that we've done, and it doesn't take a genius or, you know, to think back just a little bit of the activities that we performed even in this lifetime. And we sort of look back and we think, my God, we were pretty horrible people. We had so many. We were filled with pride, envy, lust, greed, you know, avarice, so many different things. So we have to become cleansed. But the Lord actually takes control and he manipulates our karma and just gives us enough, you know. Maybe we stub our toe. If we stub our toe, we should have broken our foot. You know, if we have a serious cold, we should have been down with pneumonia. If we have a car accident, we probably would have ended up in hospital. So many times we hear that, you know, that there are things that go on. Prabhupada even said that sometimes our karma can be worked out in our dreams, you know. To Krishna's merciful, he said, oh, this guy can't handle too much. In his dreams, we'll give him some not frightening nightmares and can mitigate some of the reactions in that way. So, the devotee can experience calamities. You know, the Bhagavatam is full of different calamities that great souls, not what to speak of us, but great souls have gone through so much suffering. Just recently I'm reading in the first canto about Ashwatthama, what a demon this guy was. You know, he killed all the children of Draupadi. Not just did he kill them, I mean, if this was today, in today's society, this guy would be looked at as the worst monster of all time. He snuck into a tent and cut the kids' heads off. You know, this is how horrible, and I mean, this is to Draupadi, who was, Krishna was there, you know, after the battle of Kurukshetra. And he was a real nasty piece of work, you know. So these calamities happen, you know. Queen Kunti prays also. So many things happen to her, you know. But she prays in the prayers of Queen Kunti, you know, please let them happen again and again and again. So we can take an example from these great devotees, how they deal with these calamities when they come. Because at that stage we have a greater opportunity to remember Krishna. Devotees can handle any situation like that, any calamitous situation, with grace. Even Draupadi, when she had that happen to her, she handled herself with Krishna conscious grace. You know, Arjuna said, listen, Draupadi, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get this guy and I'm going to rip his head off and really fix him up. And when Arjuna ultimately got him, Ashwatthama, Krishna said, yeah, kill him. Yeah, go for it, kill him. He should be dead. What he's done, he should be dead. And Bhima also said, yeah, get him, kill him. You know, Yudhisthira said, hang on a tick. And Draupadi also said, no, I can't do this to him. So she handled this negative situation with grace. She said, no, I can't handle that you do this to him. Because, there are many factors that I can't see that he is the son of a Brahmana. Ashwatthama's Dronacharya. He was the guru of the Pandavas, and so I can't have this happen. And she said, okay, humiliate him, take away his prestige, and that way he has a death. So she handled it with grace. Similarly, we have a more current experience of Srila Prabhupada. Pure devotee comes from India. You know, we'd expect, that Krishna would make every arrangement for Prabhupada, that the sea would open up and he would come to America and everything would be great. No, on the way, Prabhupada suffered so many heart attacks and so many ailments. And Prabhupada prayed, whatever you want, I'm your puppet, just let me serve you, Krishna. Again, he handled it with grace and with that, the whole Krishna consciousness movement took off. And so many times we see also with disciples of His Divine Grace and grand disciples of His Divine Grace how devotees meet calamities with such grace. In the 80s, there was one incident which always really inspired me. There was a French devotee, a French lady devotee who was in a car accident. And she was a good devotee. She did deity worship and she was just really, And it was a major car accident. Many, many people were injured and so on. And she was actually helping all the injured people, looking after them, chanting while she was rearranging everybody. And everybody said, are you okay, Mataji? Are you okay? Yes, I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Look after the people. And she was waiting for the bus, for the ambulance to come and everything. And then when everybody was looked after, she just went back to a little laneway or some... I'm not exactly sure, but she went off to the side somewhere, chanted Hare Krishna and passed away. Just like that. She looked after everyone else, knew that her time had come, and she passed away. So a great calamity befell her. But in the same token, she was uplifted and helped other people, remembered Krishna, and went back home, back to Godhead. So also this karma, when these events happen to us, there's no residue. So when a karmic thing happens to a materialist, there may be some residue, there may be some leftover, some karmic reaction, he may cause another karmic reaction and so on and so forth. But when something happens to a devotee, they just surrender it to Krishna and carry on. So there's no residue. There's an interesting thing, so there's no further entanglement. There's an interesting quote that was made here by Lord Yamaraj. This was really, really interesting. Now, a lot of people may take this differently. My dear servants, please bring me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name of Krishna and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties towards Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all those fools and rascals. What does that mean? Do you think from this purport that this means it's only the Hare Krishna movement? It's only Vaishnavas that Lord Yamaraj is interested in? Or does it mean anybody that in some way in their lives are striving for some God consciousness? It means that. It means if a person is in some way or another striving to serve Krishna. So that's why Prabhupada was emphatic when he came to the West. I haven't come to start up a new religion. I haven't come to change anybody's religious belief. I've come to encourage you to be more Krishna conscious in your belief. Prabhupada wasn't a fanatic where he said, it's my way or the highway. I'm the only way. Prabhupada was so magnanimous. He said, yeah, if you are a Christian, become a very good Christian. If you're a Muslim, become a very good Muslim. So on and so forth. If you are a Jew, become a very good Jew. And he acted and reacted and interacted with members of other religions just in that way. So similarly, we as devotees should also see that in our preaching. We encourage people to be more godly, to be more gracious in serving God. If at their level of evolution, that's all they can do, to worship in a Christian way or in a Jewish way, then we understand that. But we understand also that by them making that slight effort, they're safe from the court of Lord Yamaraj. If they once worship God, if once in any lifetime, you know, a person has a thought, this is how merciful Krishna is, just a thought, gee, you know, I wonder if there's God. And if there's God, maybe I should pray to him. That's enough. From here it says, even once, if one remembers the lotus feet of Krishna, it doesn't mean that they have to see the deity form of Krishna or a picture of Krishna, just the thought of God, even if it's that simple, then they're safe from sinful reaction. So we have to encourage a person to move up the ladder of spiritual life and encourage them to become more Krishna conscious in their belief. And if they're sincere and if they're genuine, they will actually make a close connection with Krishna, and eventually, hopefully, they will come to Krishna consciousness. But a lot of people actually misinterpret this. Sometimes people say, you know, well, it's only Krishna consciousness, Prabhu, it's only Krishna, you have to surrender. No, we have to be broad-minded in our understanding that it's, if a person lives a life that's at least trying to be a little bit God conscious in whatever tradition they come for, that is still good, and we encourage them to build on that. So one of the 26, and a devotee actually finds anything that's troublesome as mercy of Krishna. You know, I mean, just as a perfect example, at Gopal's, you'd reckon, now this is Krishna's restaurant, we're supposed to be serving prasadam, why does that damn lift break down all the time? You know, it's like you think that we'd have the best functioning lift of all, you know, Krishna would just make the arrangements. No, but it doesn't. And every now and again, when we're under pressure, guess what? The lift breaks down. And what do we do? Ah, thanks, Krishna. It makes us think a little bit more tapasya. So that's just a small thing. So any karmic reaction or any troublesome situation is not a burden for a devotee. And a devotee, of the 26 qualities of a devotee is Krishnaika Sharana, fully surrendered only to Krishna. Fully surrendered only to Krishna. And Prabhupada says, what's the meaning of surrender? The meaning of surrender is to follow all the rules, even the small ones. So just accepting the instructions of the spiritual master and the Vaishnava Shastras, just following nicely, and that's the surrendering process. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that Lord Chaitanya came to teach renunciation, knowledge, and also the science of surrender. And how do we surrender? Fundamental thing. Number one, when a troublesome situation comes, we surrender. We immediately say, okay, Krishna, what have you got planned for this one? You know, why am I going through this? Analyze it, see it with a Krishna conscious point of view, and be thankful. Not that it let it trouble us. But Sarvabhauma said that one surrenders one's speech. By the chanting of Hare Krishna, one surrenders one's speech, one's hearing, and one's mind. Surrendering the mind. The mind will constantly tell us, why me? Why is this happening to me? Why me? You know, why aren't I wealthy? Why can't I do this? Why? So the mind, by chanting, when we surrender the mind, when we surrender our speech, our hearing, when we surrender our mind, we actually give it all over to Krishna. Now, recently, I don't know if anybody's heard of this, but in the broader world, there is a new spiritual or quasi-spiritual thought, and there's one New Age teacher called Eckhart Tolle. Anybody heard of him? He's huge, right? You heard of him? Right. One of the great teachers of our time, Oprah Winfrey, is endorsing him, that his teachings are really beneficial. I had an opportunity to read some of his books. And basically, if you've read his books, he's basically saying how the mind is our biggest enemy. And that somehow or other we have to control our mind, that the mind only exists in past and present and future. That in the present there isn't any mind, really, or mind control. So there, at the point of his whole teachings is to be in the now. The book that he has out is actually The Power of Now, being in the now. So in a sense we can understand that that's similar in a sense, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, no hankering, lamenting. But in the same token, to control the mind is very difficult to do. So this teachings, when you read this book, he says, yeah, try and control the mind, but he doesn't give an actual process by which you can control the mind. Krishna consciousness gives you every opportunity, by engaging and remembering Krishna at all times. I just wanted to read one purport where Arjuna actually says this, that the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate and very strong, O Krishna, and to subdue it seems to me more difficult than controlling the wind. The mind is so strong, this is Prabhupada's purport, the mind is so strong and obstinate that it sometimes overcomes the intelligence. Although the mind is supposed to be subservient to the intelligence, for a man in the practical world who fights with so many opposing elements, it is certainly very difficult to control the mind. Artificially, one may establish a mental equilibrium towards both friend and enemy, but ultimately, no worldly man can do so. For this is more difficult than controlling the raging wind. Has anybody ever seen those winds that they get in Western Australia where they nearly blow you over? It's just so powerful. And you try and control them, like if you followed what this Eckhart Tolle is saying, just switch off the mind. Just be now and you'll be self-realized. I mean, people must be reading this and thinking, how can I do this? When did you read his books at all, Prabhu?
Well, I've just heard of
him. Heard of him, yeah. Kate, have you? So?
I've read some different authors, something similar.
Oh, yeah. There are many people that are having that consciousness now. But to try and control the mind is so, so difficult. Prabhupada then points out, in Vedic literatures it is said, the individual is a passenger in the car of the material body. Intelligence is the driver. The mind is the driving instrument. And the senses are the horses. The self is thus the enjoyer or sufferer in association of the mind and the senses. So it is understood by great thinkers, intelligence is supposed to direct the mind. But the mind is so strong and obstinate that it often overcomes even one's own intelligence. Such a strong mind is supposed to be controlled by the practice of yoga. But such practice is never practical for a worldly person like Arjuna. And what can we say of a modern man? The simile used here is appropriate. One cannot capture the blowing wind, and it is even more difficult to capture a turbulent mind. The easiest way to control the mind, as suggested by Lord Chaitanya, is chant Hare Krishna. The great mantra for deliverance in all humility, the method prescribed is Savai Mam Krishna Paravindayo. One must engage one's mind fully in Krishna. Only then will there remain no other engagements to agitate the mind. So this is our battleground, to control the mind over and over again. And we have to start to see, well, really what makes life worth living? To control the mind we have to actually see, well, what can I do? How can I fix this mind? Krishna is saying, to fix one's mind one has to have a sheer mission, a purpose to life. What is the really meaning of life? And the meaning of life is to become completely engrossed in Krishna's service. This whole surrendering process, just completely surrender ourselves to Krishna in every way, shape and form, whatever comes, whatever may come. My Lord, if it's a horrible thing or a good thing, let me just take it and accept it and surrender to that. So we have to have a mission. We have to have a selfless drive. When we were, before we were in Krishna consciousness, we were very much selfishly motivated. Everything was the I factor. I want to be wealthy. I want to be rich. I want to have the best partner in my life. I want to have an opulent house. I want to have this. I want to, I want to, I want to. When we come to Krishna consciousness, our mind should be trained to think, Krishna want? What does Krishna want? What does Guru want? Like that. And surrender to that. This is true mind control. Krishna says, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Now this is a major sort of thing. You know? There are many grihasthas, especially the brahmacharis, don't care. Yeah, you can have my money, I don't mind. I just live peacefully in the brahmachari ashram. I don't need anything. Brahmacharinis also, who cares, you know. Yeah, it's as long as I get my subji and rice and can worship the deities. But the grihasthas, actually, they struggle with this one boy. And when you hear this verse, they go, ooh, Krishna's going to take away. But Krishna actually is a very merciful personality. He knows the heart and mind of all his devotees. But when he says that he's taking away his material wealth, yeah, he does. But that doesn't mean that we're paupers. That doesn't mean that we're, you know, we go living in a little ramshackle little hut out the back there somewhere, you know, I've got no money. And no. But what does a devotee do? If wealth comes by the mercy of the Lord, we utilize it in what? In Krishna's service. You know, so many times, if you ask a devotee, if your parents bought you a Tats lotto ticket, what would you do with it if you won $2 million? Would you go out and buy a Lamborghini? Would you go out and buy a far-out house? Most opulent clothes, minks, stoles and jewellery? And a devotee who is 100% surrendered to Krishna says, oh God, no, I don't want any of that. You know, what can I do with that? Oh, I can give so much to my Guru Maharaj, I can give so much to the Melbourne Temple, I'd organise new altars here. And you know, the mind, straight away, the mind and the imagination goes berserk. So if Krishna wants to give this, just like, then you utilise it in Krishna's service. Classic example, a person that was born into wealth by his karma, you know, Ambarish Prabhu, you know, has wealth like you wouldn't believe. He's one of the Ford member, you know, one of the Ford family. I think something like he makes a dollar for every Ford that's sold in the world. Can you imagine that? And what does he do? Gives $30 million just like that to Sad Bhuj and the Mayapur committee. Build Prabhupada's Temple of Vedic Understanding, you know, the Vedic Planetarium. Build it. Want to build that. And he gives so much. So many other different people are giving so much. So a devotee is not a pauper. He's not deprived of anything. But we're fixed in our mission. We know what we want to do. Everyone is an individual. And as I've said before, we each have to find what is our mission within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Where does our natural propensity come that I can render service to Krishna, that I can surrender to Krishna? And both male and female have to analyse what are my propensities, how can I use my intellect, how can I use my creativity, how can I use the facilities that Krishna has given me in the service to Krishna? What's my mission? We have to think about this. We can't be complacent. Because if we have complacency, if we're thinking, oh yeah, we'll just go along, then what happens is, as Prabhupada was pointing out in the purport of that Bhagavad Gita, even a person that has great intelligence, the mind will enter in. Maybe you need a new dhoti. Maybe you'd like a silk dhoti. Maybe you'd like new saris. Maybe it'd be better at another temple. Maybe this and maybe that. Instead, we should just think, no, I'm completely satisfied here, and whatever arrangement Krishna makes, I'm happy to accept that. And so we have to look like that. We have to be very fixed and utilize everything that comes our way to serve and surrender to Krishna. Even though we may still be overpowered by lower impulses. It's not that we come to Krishna consciousness and all these lower impulses from previous lives will automatically go away. It doesn't happen like that. It takes time. But that's the point of remaining fixed in our service. If we remain fixed like that, then those lower impulses may come, but you'll shove them off. Like, say, for example, if we're walking through the city and we see a cake shop and we see beautiful cakes, chocolate eclairs, vanilla slices, beautiful Bavarian chocolate cakes, so on and so forth. What does the mind say? Ooh, look at that. But what does our superior and Krishna conscious intelligence say? Boga. Absolute rubbish in there. Dead cows, eggs, cooked with an unclean consciousness. You couldn't force it down my throat. Right? So similarly, in all different other ways, we do the same. When we're walking down the street and we see a nice member of the opposite sex coming, what does the mind say? Ooh, look at that. And what does our superior Krishna conscious intelligence say? They are a child of Krishna. Everyone belongs to Krishna. I can't touch this. I can't lust after this. So although we may not be completely purified, we have to work at being fixed in our mission. And our mission is to serve the spiritual master and serve Krishna. So that missionary zeal, that opportunity to serve really nicely, is the higher taste. Because that's the higher taste that enables us to say no to the cake, no to the member of the opposite sex, no to a Lamborghini, no to a fancy house, no to the... We can, by developing this higher taste. Now, what's our higher taste? Our higher tastes are all the different facets of Krishna consciousness. When a materialist is, may have their Lamborghinis, they may have their beautiful partners, they may have their beautiful house and their holidays in Aspen and sailing on the Caribbean and so many things. Have you ever seen or heard of any of these materialists that are happy? Really happy? Really content in their lives? None of them. None of them. Yet, a devotee has a treasure chest, an absolute treasure chest of all different sorts of opulences. Our Krishna consciousness, when one becomes a Krishna conscious devotee, we become incredibly opulent. We eat the most sumptuous foodstuffs that have been offered to the Lord. Healthiest foodstuffs. We have a beautiful house that we can come and associate with. We have the greatest friends that will love us not for our money, not for our wealth, not for our prestige and power, but love us because we are devotees of the Lord. Think about that. We are so fortunate to have such great acquaintances. And the devotees are actually such a treasure to behold. Friendship in Krishna consciousness is the greatest treasure. One of the great treasures in our treasure house. When people come to Krishna consciousness, we actually, in a sense, we can offer them a treasure chest. If you come to Krishna consciousness, no, we can't provide you all these material things. And yet Krishna may take away some material or your attachment to these material things. He'll take that away from you, which is a good thing. But in response, we give you this nice treasure chest, which you open up and it's got pure friendship, loving relationships, an opportunity to have a great teacher and a great relationship, to learn knowledge. People spend fortunes just trying to gain knowledge. You go to these seminars, these self-help seminars, people have spent absolutely their life savings to be hepped up by some, new age live wire of a guy hepping you up saying life is really meant to be lived and you can get the best sports car and everybody. And they're searching so much they spend all their money to gain some knowledge which is absolutely useless without Krishna, without the Supreme Lord. It's good to develop different self-development techniques if you put Krishna first. So that's that whole analogy. Everything in the material world are but zeros. But if you put a one in the front, which is Krishna, it becomes worth something. So knowledge is there. In the treasure trove of a devotee, we open it up and we give unlimited knowledge, unlimited love, unlimited pastimes. And one thing that a devotee, again, one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is that a devotee is aniha. Aniha. A devotee is indifferent to material acquisitions. Doesn't care for it. You know, okay, if I need a good car, Krishna will provide you a good car to do service. Krishna will provide you a nice house to do service. You know. So this is our point. Our treasure chest, the devotee's treasure chest, is all the different facets. And one thing that I particularly wanted to make a point of, and there are many, many things in our little storehouse, but one thing that I really wanted to make a point of is deity worship. And how very, very special deity worship is. And how this is the greatest gift that a devotee can be given. That is, as a devotee, to have the wealth to be able to serve the deity of Krishna. With knowledge, we understand that Krishna is non-different from his deity form, as is Srila Prabhupada, non-different from his deity form. We as devotees get an opportunity to render service to Krishna directly. And as soon as a devotee is able to do more and more service for the deity, the greater and greater the nectar becomes. The greater you start to realize what an incredible treasure we have. In our homes are owned by the deity, by Krishna. A lot of people say, oh yes, I have one house here and one house there and one house there. I have one house. When a devotee buys a house, the house is not for them. The house is for Krishna. And what does the devotee do? They set up the altar in the best room of the house because this house belongs to Krishna. And then the devotees live in that house as a servant of Krishna. That's Krishna conscious. So that deity or the murti or of the deity in the house becomes the center point. And that's our treasure. Now you can bring a gross materialist into your home and they can see the deity or the altar set up and they say, hey, that's nice. And think that you're a fruitcake. What the heck is this person doing? But if you have someone that's a little bit sensitive, they can understand, I can't have what these people have got. This worship of Krishna, this connection with the deity form of the Lord. It's so abstract for them to try and understand how you're just worshipping a piece of stone here. And you're dressing with all the, like my wife makes for our deities, beautiful sets, And she makes the jewellery individually, making all the jewellery, making it really nice and as best she can with the finances that Krishna has given us. And somebody will come in who's a gross materialist and say, oh, that's really nice. You could make wedding dresses and you could make a lot of money. But they don't see that the fulfillment is there in just giving it and surrendering it to Krishna, making Krishna look nice. Because what it does is it purifies our consciousness and it develops a reciprocal relationship between the deity and Krishna and the devotee. So similarly, that's the home environment. And every home should be a temple. Every grihastha's home or brahmachari bachelor or brahmacharini bachelor home should have as its focus Krishna in the center. And then that's the preliminary stage. And then everyone, as Prabhupada said, should come to the temple to worship the most important deities of the local temple. We may have our deities at home, but in the same token we should also come and worship the principal deities as established by the Acharya. Like Prabhupada set up these beautiful deities of Radha Balabha, Jagannath Ji, Baladev and Subhadra, and Gaur-Nitai. We see the video of Prabhupada installing Gaur-Nitai. So, when we come to Krishna consciousness, one of the things, one of the treasure troves, one of the jewels that we want to access as quickly as possible when we come to Krishna consciousness in our little treasure chest of Krishna conscious items is somehow or other to get the opportunity to serve more intimately these deities of Krishna, right here, these incarnations of Krishna. So often what happens is a person strives to do that, like when they come as a bhakta or a bhaktin, they get to work in the wet side and the dry side and doing the paraphernalia and making garlands and so on and so forth, which is very satisfying. But then you get an opportunity to do more and more. And then you get an opportunity to become initiated. Or now I can do some more cooking, something else for the deity. And then you get your brahminical initiation. And now I can go on the altar and I can serve Krishna directly. And believe me, for a person that's been doing deity worship for the last 30 years, there is no greater nectar than to worship the deities of the Lord. And to control the mind is to keep remembering how you serve the deities. To remember during the day, if you had an opportunity to serve the deity, how I served the Lord, how merciful the Lord was. And to forecast in the future, to think of the future, what can I do for the Lord? How can I make it better for Him? And so on and so forth. So deity worship is our great treasure. But sometimes what happens is the devotees become complacent. Ah, yes, we have our deities at home and this we are doing. There are so many brahminical people within this Melbourne temple. Many, many brahminical people, Brahmins, that are living outside. But somehow or other they're not doing direct worship to the deities, which unfortunately is something that has to be addressed within the heart of each and every one of us. We have to make a point that that deity roster should be full. Krishnagaraju, you would agree with that? That deity roster should be full with people canvassing. I want to dress on Wednesday. No, you can't. I want to dress on Wednesday. I want to do the arti. No, you can't. I'm doing the arti. That's how it should be. Because if Krishna was really here, let's say, if Krishna was really here, which he is, but let's just say, if Krishna actually manifested himself, we would be busting the doors down to touch his lotus feet, to put a garland on. And I get to dress Krishna? Prabhupada has made emphatically the point, there is no difference, absolutely no difference, between the deity form of the Lord and the Lord himself. It's all a matter of consciousness. And sometimes when you do the deity worship, if you do the shalagrams, or you're dressing Radha Balabha or Jagannath or Gornitai, or dressing Srila Prabhupada, sometimes in our contaminated and still very much clouded condition, we get a little glimpse and appreciate, this is God. And it sends shivers up your spine. Krishnagaraju, would you agree? You get shivers up your spine of actually getting an opportunity to worship God. One of the first times that I had that experience, and I have to say, and that's why, is bathing the murti of Srila Prabhupada. When I was a bhakta, I'm always a bhakta, and Prabhupada came, before we had a little murti of Prabhupada, but then we got the murti of Srila Prabhupada, and Bhagavata Shraya was the first one that started worshipping, and he trained me up to actually worship Srila Prabhupada. And fundamentally what Bhagavad was telling me was there is no difference between Prabhupada in reality and the murti of Srila Prabhupada. No difference. And so he has to be worshipped and served in the same way as if Prabhupada was here. Not that it's a lackadaisical thing that we dress him when we feel like it. It was instilled in us in the early days of Krishna consciousness that we should bathe Prabhupada as early as we can because that's what he liked. Not what we liked, that's what he liked. He liked to be dressed before Mangalarti, if possible, or immediately after Mangalarti, at that time. Not that it's something, oh, well, I can only make it here, Prabhu, by about 6:30. Okay, yeah, then I'll dress Prabhupada. Prabhupada was dressed straight after Mangalarti in the clothes that he liked to wear, that he was warm. But one thing, the experience that I had, so I had that service. And for those pujaris that have ever bathed Srila Prabhupada, the way that Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu made the murtis of Prabhupada, when you feel Prabhupada's back and you're washing his back, it's like he's there. You know, it's like washing his back. It's like, oh, wow. That's the mood that you start to engender, you know. So everyone should be enthusiastic to render some devotional service to the deities. We have our deities at home and that's fine. But somehow or other we should make an effort, especially with Janmashtami coming up and with so many festival days, to remind us that Krishna is a person and he's living amongst us. He's here for our service and he's benedicting us all. We should somehow or other offer some service to him. Not that it's so difficult for us, you know. Sometimes you have the argument, oh yes, but Prabhu, I live in Hoppers Crossing, or I live in somewhere else. It's too difficult for me to come early in the morning to worship the deity. That's a nonsense. It's not that hard. One day a week we can do. One day a week, even if you lived in Timbuktu and you had to wake up at 2:30 to go and do some service to the deity, you can do it. Every one of us can do it. Somehow or other we can make arrangement. And the reciprocation that you get from the Lord is just immense. And it's part of our treasure chest. It's part of this thing that we have, this opulence that we have that no one else has. But we as devotees have got. So I'm pleading, you know, it's so hard for some of the managers of this temple to try and get devotees to come forward to offer themselves with brahminical work as far as the altar is concerned and worshipping the deities. I'm pleading with my god brothers and sisters who are Brahmins, to come forward and say, I want to be a part of it. and bust the door down and push everybody aside to get to worshipping the deity. It's so important. Now that's just one facet of Krishna consciousness in our treasure trove of Krishna consciousness. There are unlimited different things that no one else in the material world has got. We've got. So okay, Krishna may take away our wealth, Krishna may take away any opulences, and our relatives who, you know, like when we first came to Krishna consciousness, how many people told us, well, hey, you're nuts or something? You're giving up your job, you're giving up this, and you're becoming a Hari? You know, and your friends, you know, your real friends that you thought were your real friends, you know, you're becoming a Hari, I don't want anything to do with you anymore. You know, isn't it? So Krishna is saying, yeah, I take all that away from you, but I'll give you something else. As is pointed out in the later verses, how Krishna shows you what you've got. And that is a treasure chest of wondrous things that no one else has got. And each little treasure chest is uniquely for you. Each little treasure chest has little component parts that are just for you and your service and your nectar and your transcendental excitement and enthusiasm. And that keeps us going. That keeps us going in our mission to serve the Supreme Lord. So don't be misled, or don't be downhearted when Krishna says that I especially favour someone and I gradually deprive him. Actually see this as a great boon and a great blessing, you know, and accept anything that comes in Krishna consciousness as his mercy, and accept gratefully the treasure trove of jewels and gems within our bhakti yoga treasure chest. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu?
I'm just thinking of that one Ray mentioning Guru should, you know, Brahmana should say, no, I want to do this service, I want to do this service. My experience is only one day that is there, and that is on the master.
Yeah, day. Right.
Your chit must be every day,
once
a year.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we're inundated with brahminical people. Oh no, I want to risk all entire. Oh no, I want to. Rasa and myself, oh, I'll get it, I'm going to risk all entire, you know. And we don't let anything impede our service to Krishna, you know. We don't let our mind get involved. We just want to serve Krishna, you know. There are so many things. Oh, he said this and she said that, and the temple management this and the temple management that. Forget it. Don't worry about it. Krishna's there. Just get into the deity worship and touch the Lord. You have no idea what a treasure trove it is, you know, to actually be able to touch. You know, don't you, Russell? When you actually get to touch, like I used to dress the little deities, Radha and Krishna, you know, the most nectarian service. They're so delicate, so sweet. Their little feet and everything, you know. It's just wonderful. Or the big gauni tie. If you have to put the tilak on gauni tie in the morning on his forehead, I hold his hand. So you're holding Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's hand while you're putting on this tilak. You become conscious. I'm holding Lord Nityananda's hand, you know. And then you look in his eyes and he's there. All these things are there for us. Grab them. Make it your mission, you know, to actually become advanced enough to be able to do these things. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, Russell.
Thank you for your class. Very enlightening. you were referring to Lord Chaitanya's coming to teach us how to surrender.
Yep.
And you quoted from one of the acharyas.
Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, yep.
That Chaitanya was somewhere here in the West and online. And I was wondering if you could refer me to that.
Where it is? I'll give it to you later on. I've written it at home. I'm more than happy to show. There was a section in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was explaining about the surrendering process, and that Lord Chaitanya came and gave the chanting of Hare Krishna to surrender our hearing process, our speaking process, and the process of the mind by controlling the mind by chanting japa. So that's the process. And I'll find that for you, Russell. Yeah. But controlling the mind chanting japa is a really important thing. I've mentioned that before in class. It's very important to have a meditative attitude, you know, hearing and clearly being in the now when you're chanting really is an important thing. Did you have a question for me?
How do you know If you have, of course, there are some connections, faith. If you hear from them that the person who was your mother and father in this
yep.
life or something else in previous lives,
yep.
how do you know that the connection? If you have a feeling for them, for those lives, is it? It's not attached. How do you differentiate between attachment or something that is long term connection?
It's not what, sorry?
How do you differentiate between attachment
yep.
that is long term? In that sense.
Uh-huh. From a devotee point of view?
Yes.
A devotee point, from a Krishna conscious point of view? Materially, we become really attached to anybody that's right. But from a Krishna conscious point of view, somehow or other, Prabhupada says that we all come together. No one is a stranger to us. From a devotee point of view, we can understand that each and every one of us is a spark of Krishna's energy as well. Krishna resides within the heart of every living entity. So from a devotee point of view, like when our children come to us, we accept that they're not our children, but they're Krishna's children, but they've come through our bodies. Okay? So then you always have respect. And there's a very natural, if that process has happened, there's a very natural attachment to those kids. But the greatest thing that you can give your family and your relatives is the opportunity to give them Krishna consciousness. So a materialist may look at their children and want to give them a higher education, want to give them so much money so they can set them up in business, so on and so forth. But a devotee, on the other hand, says, no, that may be there, and a good education in Krishna consciousness is good, and welfare and looked after their health is good. For what? For them to eventually serve Krishna also really nicely in their individual capacity in this lifetime. So your obligation is to help them to achieve that.
That is probably what I'm trying to differentiate. I kind of want to increase this and I'm finding the forces like people
are... Okay, I'm with you. Okay. So then what Prabhupada says is just by becoming pure yourself, you are helping so many generations before and so many generations after you. If you become a pure devotee, if you become 100% fixed up and surrendered to the Supreme Lord, completely ecstatically engaged, no longer attached to anything material, going on your business doing material things but not attached to it, then if you're a pure devotee and you go back to Krishna, then so many generations, some say it's 100, some say it's 1,000, some say 10, whatever the Shastras say, generations from your past and generations to come will also immediately get spiritual enlightenment. That you will be benefiting and giving them the greatest benefit by you becoming Krishna conscious. So you don't have to fear, you don't have to strive. You just become Krishna conscious, and the inevitable fact will be that maybe some of your siblings or some of your relatives will also see your example and want to strive for that as well, but some may not. But irrespective, they will get the benefit of you being Krishna conscious. And also what happens is, if they think favorably of you, right, then like it said in the purport here, Yamaraj goes, no touchy, I won't touch them. Because they've had a favourable thought of a devotee of Krishna, they've had a favourable thought or some contemplation about God, because they'd have to have. If they say, why is such and such now become a Hare Krishna? Maybe he's searching for God. Yeah, I remember when I was young, I was searching for God. Maybe God is true, maybe I should start praying again. Yamaraj won't touch them, and that's because of you. And you've done the thing. So if you want to do the best for them, you become Krishna conscious and you teach them as best you can. But ultimately we have to understand the broad-mindedness of Krishna consciousness is we just want people to think about God in a favorable way. And if they think about a devotee of God, then they'll naturally be alleviated that we are stopping them from taking a hellish birth and from the punishment of Yamaraj. Everyone that walks through crossways or gopals has a morsel of prasadam. They are not going to go to Yamaraj's court. We are saving them. Anyone that through a Rath Yatra procession, they see the deity of Jagannath and they go, oh, that's nice. Yamaraj won't touch them. Anyone that we encourage, that we say, oh, you're a Christian, please learn to love God more. Be more gentle in your loving of God, and please try to understand that God doesn't want you to eat meat, and you know, so on and so forth. And just by them becoming so it's imperative for a devotee to be nice to everyone and encourage everyone in their devotional life. Make sense? Yes, Prabhu?
My parents generally they're not happy that children are becoming devotees,
yeah,
because they fear of their career and their,
yeah.
So we don't want our parents to be upset
in anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, after reading Prabhupada's books, we analyze that loving Krishna, the devotional service is the topmost thing we can do in our short life.
Hmm.
So how to match this?
You have to really take solace of a lot of senior devotees also in how to deal with a situation like that. Like in the early days when we came to Krishna consciousness, and I can only give a personal example, we became incredibly fanatic about being devotees. It's like we've been searching for so long to find the truth, and then we found it. We were going, yeah! And we'd go home to our parents and say, you're nothing but meat-eating malechas, blah, blah, you know, and you should take up Krishna consciousness. Now, these are people that are 50, 60 years old. They're set in their ways. They're Catholics, you know. What the hell is this guy talking about? He's off his tree. To the extent where, you know, you had a good career, you had your own business, you're an artistic person, but and you're giving it all up for Krishna, you must be nuts, you know. And to the extent, and this is a sad thing, to the extent, and this is, and she wouldn't mind if I said it, but my mother actually became so upset that she became a kleptomaniac. She would actually lose her consciousness and go into the city and start stealing things from the shops. She didn't need to, but it was a mental condition, so much anxiety that her son, her loving son, had rejected her religion, had rejected her way of life, the material thing, right? And she'd gone down this track. In the middle of the night, I get a phone call from my father. Why are you killing my wife? He was crying on the phone. Why are you killing my wife? Why are you doing this nonsense? Why are you doing this silly thing, this Hare Krishna thing? You know? How do you reckon that made me feel? But I stuck with Krishna consciousness. And I said, Dad, I'm sorry, I was over fanatic, da da da. Over the years, we healed the situation. And my mother accepted the fact that I was a devotee. And we gently showed her what real Krishna consciousness is about and what we're about. And she could evaluate and say, yeah, this is actually a good thing. And it subsided. My father, in turn, started to ask questions after some period of time. So, what is this Krishna? You know, how do I, you know? And after a bit of maturity, we had no one to talk this out with in the early days. We had no one to go to and say, how do I handle this situation, Prabhu? So we had to figure it out ourselves. But after some years, my father was asking questions about karma, about reincarnation, about this and that. To one day, I'll never forget it, he turned around to me and said, I never thought that my own son would be my teacher. And my body just, I just got goosebumps. Not that it's anything for me, but Prabhupada's teachings had come through to enlighten this man. So that's how, in the early stages, they may not appreciate it straight away, but please, with all gentleness and with all sincerity, you just do the best you can to soften it. We were too radical, but now you have the opportunity to go to older devotees and say, how do I handle this situation, Prabhu? And yet they'll tell you, because they've been through that path. Yes, Prabhu, quickly, you've got to go.
Would you like to tell us how you responded to your father's question that you are killing my wife?
I had to couch it in the terms that he could understand. I had to be conversant in the Christian scriptures, and I had to compare the Christian scriptures to the Krishna conscious scriptures. So where Jesus said, you know, on the point of karma, I said, yeah, but Dad, you know, and he said, how do I understand karma? I said, just understand the teachings that Jesus said, you know, sow you sow, so shall you reap. And so I explained about sowing a seed, then the fruits will come. And, you know, developed on that thing. So what you have to do, what I had to do was become, well, I had that because I grew up in that Christian tradition. I had to compare the Christian tradition with the Krishna conscious tradition and help him to see the truth in that way. Because it's only one truth, you know. there's fundamental truth in the spiritual teachings of Jesus, and it's Krishna consciousness, you know. So yeah, I had to do that and had to balance it between. But it was only after a couple of years of learning the Shastra that I was able to do that. So yeah. Is that okay?
Whatever you show, you should totally read.
Yeah. Yep.
Very cool.